Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Caller 10, 800-636-1067. Congrats, you're going to win a four-pack of VIP match tickets to Old Glory DC Rugby Saturday, April 20th. They are playing Houston. Your tickets are complete with a pretty cool package here for VIPs. Old Glory Rugby Player Ambassador is going to sit and watch the game and break it down for you and your crew. You're also going to get complimentary in-seat pizza delivery courtesy of Paisanos.
I like everything about that. Number one of my new favorite obsessions is to, not that I get to do this all the time, but you kind of got to do it last night, for example, on your altcast, sitting there next to somebody that played whatever it is at the highest level and sees things that nobody else can see. Like when I go to a hockey game, for example, I've got a pretty decent understanding of hockey. I see some stuff. Carl Alsner sees things that I'll never see in my life. Same thing talking receiving with Santana Moss or quarterbacking with somebody that did it at a high level in the NFL. I am obsessed with that. That is a cool prize right there.
Yeah, very, very cool and creative and a good job by Old Glory DC Rugby.
Yeah, good job
as well.
By those guys.
So congrats, whoever's going to win that prize right now. Kick off your future with the law firm of Cundori & Meuron. They're the official show sponsor for us on Grant & Danny. They'll help protect your assets. They'll update your will and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. Visit kmlawyers.com and mention the show to get a discount. kmlawyers.com. In fact, you, me, Cundori & Meuron, we're going to the Caps game.
That's right.
Tomorrow night.
I'm coming in hot straight from one of two possible U sporting events. I'm not sure which son I'm taking where just yet, though I'm not going to figure that out, but I'll be coming from some part of deep Northern Virginia to come see you guys.
Likely an elimination game. Caps probably have to win their final three games to get into the playoffs now after a bad performance where they couldn't get any points in Buffalo last night. Speaking of the Caps, let's kick off the Beltway Blitz. And the voice of the Capitals, you hear him right here on 106.7 The Fan, the outstanding John Walton. John, real bummer last night. I actually thought the Caps played a really good first period. They were down 1-0. Second period wasn't as good. And eventually, they get beat semi-handily again by a Buffalo team that has not made the playoffs in 13 years, but you wouldn't know it when they play Washington.
Yeah, Buffalo was pretty good. I mean, that was a disappointing result, though, obviously. And for the second time in a week, you really kind of had the feel going into the game last night that, hey, listen, they had a chance to get a game plan together. They look over the tape. They find a way to exploit things and didn't really make that much difference. I thought the game was kind of there for the taking in the first period. And if you get one, you get that first one. I thought Buffalo looked a little disinterested and then they started to get some life. And it's disappointing. But like you said, you got to win the last three. And I think that's, you know, it mathematically you don't have to do that. But realistically, as you said, one back of Pittsburgh. The Penguins' schedule is not easy, but neither is the Caps. You got to beat a Tampa Bay team that may not have much to play for, but they're a playoff team. Boston may still be playing for an Atlantic Division championship on Monday. If they can beat Pittsburgh tomorrow, maybe they're not. So I think that's the hope for two reasons. Maybe they're resting some guys Monday, and then you got to take down Philly, obviously, on Tuesday. So not easy, but definitely what they need to do here.
John, as they've lost 7 of 8, a couple points in there for some overtime games, what's the difference between that stretch and that stretch where they won 8 out of 11?
I think the biggest thing, Danny, is that they're just not scoring on the power play. And it's not just because they're not scoring. It's they're not getting the opportunities. There's just not that many penalties. Spencer Carberry was talking with us earlier today at practice and said he felt like they can do more things to try and draw penalties, especially when they are in the offensive zone and make the D work a little bit more. I mean, there's a lot of different line combinations we saw last night. Pacioretty and McMichael hook up for the goal, and I like that combination. I also was intrigued by Ovechkin playing with LaPierre and Milano. It didn't deliver the results that I think we were hoping for, but, you know, you got two speed guys along with a big hammer there on the left side. So, you know, I think there's going to be some looks that maybe they can take from the Buffalo game, but look, when you've gone eight games and you're only getting two goals a game, if that, that's not enough. I mean, you're going to have to prepare, especially against a team like Tampa Bay. You need to score three or four goals. You need to try and create power play chances. Five on five, find the right combinations that work. They're still playing with them here. But one way or the other, no matter how it happens, you can't score two goals and win every night. You're going to have to find a way, especially in these last three games, to score a little bit more.
John, let's assume they don't win the final three games, they don't get a little help, and they don't get into the playoffs. How do you think we should feel? I mean, this was a team I think a lot of us kind of assumed after that Coyotes game when they sold off, it was over. And then all of a sudden, they had the world in their palms, and they had the collapse to not get in, and they effectively have with seven losses in eight games. I can just speak for myself when I say this was house money, and I love where they're at. I mean, the young kids have played a bunch and gotten experience, and I want to spend some money this offseason, and then they'll be a playoff team next year. But it's also more complicated than that because, man, should they have made the playoffs? It's so clear that just do anything other than what they did, and in the East, they should have gotten in.
Yeah, I love that view, Grant, I do. And I think that when you look at it from that perspective, look, this was always going to be a retooling year. And I think when you got caught up in the month of March where Charlie Lindgren was – the best goalie in the NHL, and they're winning close games, and they're laying out for, you know, eating pucks like Wilson and Malenstein in Detroit on Tuesday and others too, not just them. And you're like, listen, these guys believe, and who cares about the goal differential? It'd be great to get McMichael and LaPierre and Protas, all of the playoff experience at a first round matchup. Even if they didn't win it, I thought there was value there. But look, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think it's tough in the moment when you're us and you're on the planes and on the buses and in the arenas with these guys are like, last night sucked. I mean, there's really no way about it. I mean, Charlie Lindgren had just the emotion of the world coming off him in the locker room after the game and talking about it. You just felt terrible for him and all the guys who have done so much to get to this point. And it's going to be difficult now. It's not impossible, but it's going to be difficult. But I think once you get maybe a few days out, if it is the scenario you say, I think that's a perfect way of looking at it because they played meaningful games down the stretch. They know what it takes to ramp it up this time of year. And maybe that's not playoff games right now. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But if it's not, I think that's a wonderful way of looking at it. You're going to have a bunch of draft picks in the next 3 years. They've stocked the cupboard. There are going to be a lot of things that are exciting in the coming 12, 24, 36 months, the arena too now. I mean, there's a lot of positivity happening here. I would have loved to have seen it. I still think they can. But, yeah, I think that's spot on.
Yeah, I share a similar philosophy, John. Big picture, this is kind of where I think a lot of folks, including me, thought they'd be. The road to get here was not how I thought, right? I thought Kuznetsov would be part of it, and Backstrom too, and, you know, kind of how they went and the kids kind of surprised us. But the reason I want it to happen, because obviously I'm a fan, but number two, it's for guys like TJ Oshie, which you just know he's going through something physically that ain't a whole lot of fun, pushing everything he has to try to get this group just into the postseason. Love for you to speak to that, to what Oshie must be going through. I mean, we get so precious little information because it's hockey, but I can't imagine the guy's feeling great.
No, he's not. I mean, I think that's apparent just in, we're not told much more either, yeah. But when you see him walking around, he got hit with a puck last night and the way he was hunched over at the bench and just, he is in a lot of pain. He's a gamer. He's a guy that can play in any era. He's a guy that you pull for. He's a guy that drags the team into the fight. And I think he was one of the biggest reasons when he was in the lineup in March. I think back to Vancouver when we didn't even think in game 1000 he was going to even play. And then we weren't sure if he was going to play in the game. They were honoring him a few days later at home. And he's gone through so much. And the guys love him. I mean, he is going to go down in this team's history as one of the best right wings they've ever had. I think it's the best trade Brian McClellan ever made. That was a heist. That was felony-level robbery there of the St. Louis Blues to be able to bring him in. I can't say enough about number 77. And I don't know what the future holds. I don't think anybody outside of TJ and his family do. But I love the fact that he's been in there like last night and all the way through here just trying to will this team in. And for him, maybe more than anyone else, I hope they find a way between now and Tuesday.
John, thank you. And for goodness sake, could you call a win tomorrow night?
I will do the best I can, fellas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Matter of fact, call three of them in
a row. Just, if you're just going to do one, do three.
Mind. If you're going to do one, give us three. Let's keep the blitz moving. Earl Forsey on the Beltway Blitz, a tradition unlike any other. Speaking of which, Earl, I got to get your thoughts on the Masters really quick. Golf up this show for us a little bit. What's going on in Augusta?
Since I'm not working this week, not paying as much attention, but you have to. Scottie Scheffler is the best player in the world, and he's right there again, and probably he's going to have a good chance to win again Sunday. That's basically it.
Bryson DeChambeau, who I believe is still leading at -7. I think everybody hates him. I like him because he's different and he annoys people. Yeah. Why does everyone hate his guts?
Because he was always the he takes a less traditional approach, I guess you could say, and he was bulking up. And what fans loved about it, because he was just trying to, you know, hit golf balls as hard as he could, just go out there and, you know, hit home runs or strike out, basically, was his thing. But, you know, that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, you know, around the game of golf, and now he's one of the LIV guys. So there's going to be a big contingent of fans not rooting for him this weekend. And part of that, too, like you said, is just not – he comes off as arrogant. I don't mind that. I mean, you know, that's – kind of the way I am too, so I don't mind that part of it. But that doesn't play well. That doesn't. Yeah, I mean, I kind of appreciate that. That doesn't play well at Augusta, you know.
Earl, I'm assuming I haven't checked a single time, and I don't plan to. But I assume Tiger Woods is terrible. How close are we to people just not pretend anymore that he's still a thing? Like, are we getting there yet?
No, he's always going to be a thing, Danny, because he's the best probably it's ever played.
Oh, sure, yeah, he was. Yeah,
he's an icon, and see, that is a game where, you know, we've seen now recent years Brady, who is just – he's like a living legend still playing. But you don't see that a lot in professional sports. Golf is one of those things where he – you know, is he going to win? No, but he's still capable. And he's still that guy. And he's still – look, if you go to a tournament, there's still tens of thousands of people following him and not the other guys just because of who he is. And he's Ali, you know, with golf clubs is what it is. And we saw at the end of Ali's career, the same kind of thing happened, different circumstances. But he was always a draw, right? And it didn't matter who he was fighting, what, you know, tomato can or whatever. It was Ali. And that's kind of where Tiger Woods is now. Made the cut. I think he's going to make the cut this week. And that's a big deal because it's 24 for him, like an all-time record.
If 24 in a row, Danny. He's made the cut.
He is who he is, guys. He's just, you know, he's not physically able to compete. But you know, week to week anymore. He's only going to play once a month. But, you know, sometimes you wake up the echoes with a guy like that. You just never know. When he feels frisky for 4 days, he can still play with anyone. And that's what people want. You know, that's what people are hoping for. Just lightning in a bottle. You never know.
Earl, speaking of what people want, the people want to know what the Commanders are going to do at number two. Yeah. Who do you think they're going to take as we're 13 days out?
Well, yeah, we're less than two weeks. So there's a gleam, man. There's a gleam. And he's got a quarterback number on the back. Who do I you know, I've been saying all along, Jaden Daniels. I think that's your pick. I know there's talk about everybody, and it's the time of year where we can't get there soon enough, because whether it's Drake May or Jaden Daniels or anybody, name all the above, basically, you're going to start hearing the bad stuff about him this time of year. And, you know, I think you concentrate on what they can do, not what they don't do. And I think the Jaden Daniels body of work and what he can bring you immediately is what I would be attracted to, a guy who can step right in and be create something for you, be a difference maker, be a guy who can be a playmaker like what RG3 did 10 years ago, well, 12 years ago now for this team. Let me give you some background. Quarterbacks, though, in Washington. I was there in the 90s, 94, third round, third overall pick, Heath Shuler. That didn't work. 2000, in the sixth round, Washington picked Todd Husak with the 202nd pick. You know who went three picks before that? Tom Brady to the Patriots.
Husak out of Stanford, my guy.
Yeah, 2005, 25th pick overall, Gibbs Love, Jason Campbell. You know who went the pick before that? Aaron Rodgers, 24. So yeah, the quarterback thing historically just doesn't work out for this team. Hopefully all that's behind them. It's a crapshoot. I think it's kind of a luck of the draw lottery. And a lot of this has to do with situation. I'll go back to those other two. Do you think if Aaron Rodgers would have been selected by Washington, he'd be Aaron Rodgers right now? Do you think if Tom Brady would have slipped three more picks and went to Washington in 2000, he would have been Tom Brady. No. So that's the whole thing, too. I think part of this is the infrastructure the last three decades has not been there for quarterback success. You know, the one thing, whoever this is, and I said I think Jaden Daniels is the guy. I just posted on X yesterday getting a lot of feedback. Brian Kelly, the LSU coach, was on NFL Network this week. And look, I know he's his quarterback, and he wants his guy drafted high, and he's going to heap praise upon the guy that he coached the last 2 years, but had a lot of great things to say about him. Cowherd on his show today said he's going to watch Washington in the draft and may have them winning the division if he thinks they draft strongly. So, you know, this is the perspective on this team that maybe they've turned a corner, at least organizationally they have. And I think part of this is I'm not a Jaden Daniels or bust guy or Drake May or bust. If you don't draft Drake May, I'm going to not root for the team anymore. Yeah, I'm not that kind of guy. I trust the brain trust now and Adam Peters and everyone there that they're going to do the right thing. We know he's been looking at quarterbacks since before he came here. Right? We've had the reports last couple of weeks that he was looking at Drake May while he was still in San Fran. So this is not a guy that just came in a couple of months ago and started looking at quarterbacks. He's a pretty smart guy. I think he's kind of has his idea of what he wants to do. I know we're still 2 weeks out and the quote, have not decided yet. Of course, when you're looking at houses or cars before you buy, don't you kind of know what you're going to do? I mean, you know, that's kind of where we are. Could it change? Sure. But I'm pretty positive that they probably know if they had to turn that in that card right now, what name they would write there. And I think that's still the great unknown is we don't know what direction this new GM and front office is going to go. And I think that's great that no one really, it seems, in the NFL knows either. I think that's a win and maybe we'll all be surprised. But I think the organization that's in place now, the quarterback they pick, guys, is not going to be failed by the team that takes him. That's been the case too many times, except for Kirk Cousins here. He somehow survived the mess and thrived because of Kyle Shanahan, basically, I think. But, you know, that's always been, for 30 years, it's been the case, and that's the one thing that's different. And you know, I think in a roundabout way, I've also said that it doesn't matter who you take. If the structure is not there for that guy, he's not going to be Brady or Aaron Rodgers. You've got to have that whole organization in place. And I think now, finally, they may have that whole thing in place. We'll see.
Earl, thank you as always, buddy.
Yep.
Our guy, Earl Forsey, getting you up to date every 30 right here on The Fan. Appreciate him joining the Blitz. Let's quickly hit the baseball club in town. Your Washington Nationals. Jake Irvin, Paul Blackburn, your pitching matchup tonight in Oakland. Nats, A's, little late night Nats. Irvin on the season, 5.7 earned run average. Has actually pitched a little better than the line. Blackburn has given up just 6 hits and punched out 7. An ERA sitting at 0 as he makes his next start now against Washington. The final ride at the Coliseum for the Nats. They only go there every couple years.
Yeah, weird, right? It's one of those things. I'm watching it. Not I would watch it anyhow, but just I'm going to make sure that I do because you're not going to see many games in Oakland anymore, right? Unless there's an expansion team down the line or something to that effect. You're sort of watching, in a weird way, some history, right? A couple teams that cities that have had a history of losing pro sports organizations. Washington lost the Senators 2 different times. Oakland has lost teams a million times over. So there's a little bit of a kinship there. So I will be certainly checking it out against, by the way, Paul Blackburn, 0 runs given up in 13 innings. Just bizarre.
I don't know.
I don't know what's going on.
Start number 3 for him. Nats, after the day off, should have the full allotment of the bullpen. It sounds like even Harvey is probably healthy for them right now. Hunter Harvey, who took the ball off the hand.
Off his left hand,
looked like he could be going to the shelf. He says the hand's doing fine, so hopefully he will be available for them this evening. There you go, your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Remember, we're taking you up to 6:30 this evening. Still got to preview the weekend ahead in DC Sports, but next, Eric Eager, our buddy, used to be over at PFF. Now he's with Sumer Sports. We had him on at the Super Bowl. He was awesome. Want to get his thoughts on some of the craziness with this NFL draft and the hot takes all over the place on all these quarterbacks. We'll do that in a moment right here on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to The Fan. We're Grant and Danny with you for another 2 hours today. VP of Sumer Sports is Eric Eager, good friend of the show for many, many years, talking all things analytics of football, and he joins us now on the BetQL guest hotline. Eric, we are under 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. You're on in D.C. where the Commanders have the number two pick. What's your thought on what they should do with that selection?
Well, I think that quarterback is obviously the choice, and I don't know that they can go wrong with May or Daniels. I think Daniels is the favorite kind of wherever you look in the markets, and I get that. I think that there's quite a bit. He was as productive as any quarterback in this draft the last 2 years, and that includes Caleb Williams last year at LSU. I think that there are some questions about how slender he is and his pressure to sack ratio, but you know, he's a very good player there. I think that they could also do really well by taking Drake May, who's kind of that prototypical size at the position, great arm strength, good athleticism. So I think Washington fans, probably for the first time since they were picking seconds in 2012, should be really optimistic about what the team's doing here. And they have a couple options that I think are both intriguing for the club.
Eric, so just big picture, a couple of decades ago, we're sitting there going, what's the quarterback's record? And he just wins, and he's got a good chin. You know, now we're talking about pressure to sack rate. So the debate and conversations have advanced a long way, right? What's kind of popular information, and we know more than we ever have. But Grant's been, I don't want to put words in his mouth, he's been pretty concerned about that pressure to sack rate for Jaden Daniels there at number two. I've been less concerned because I think there's more context to it. I'd love for you to kind of go into that, right? Because that number, that 20% threshold, you don't want to be in that company generally, but I do think Daniels is an exception for a couple different reasons, but just want to hear you speak to it.
Yeah, it's not an eliminator, right? And I know you guys are in the NFC East, and I look back at like Randall Cunningham, right, who in the first 5 years of his career as a starter led the NFL in sacks taken four times. And during that time, he was second in MVP voting twice. He won a division twice. But that Eagles team never won a playoff game those years. And then, you know, they lost to the Commanders a few times, and there was always something missing. Right. And I think that that's been the hidden variable where a lot of people look at passer rating, look at completion percentage, they look at touchdown interception ratio. And we're now finally becoming a little bit more awake. And I think Commanders fans last year realized with a guy like Sam Howell, who I think threw the ball pretty well most of the year, how much sacks can hurt an offense. To me, it's more just looking at that guy coming in and saying, you know, doing what the Bears failed to do, which is look at a guy like Justin Fields and say, okay, if I'm going to bring the guy in here, he's got a lot going for him, but the pressure to sack ratio is a problem, and I need to be able to build a team that avoids that issue. Washington's brought in, you know, Wiley and Lucas and Allegretti over the last few years, Beatis. They brought in people, you know, to try to protect him. Can they craft a system to accentuate Daniel's strength while avoiding what is very truly a weakness? And this is the biggest point, a weakness that has been one of the stickier ones, college to pro. Accuracy is something a guy can improve. A performance under pressure is a thing a guy can improve as a passer. But college to pro, pressure to sack ratio is pretty stable. So knowing that weakness is there ahead of time, can the Commanders build an offensive line so that they can avoid it? if they can, then it's not as big of a red flag as I think a lot of people are making it out to be.
Eric Eager of Sumer Sports on G&D. What are some of the analytical areas of concern for Drake May? A lot of what you hear is guys like Chris Sims who watch the tape and say they don't like the consistency of the mechanics or some of the misses. Are there numbers and data things where May is problematic?
Well, the one is May really struggled in the middle of the field? And so when I like to talk about, you know, quarterbacks throwing middle, you know, in terms of doubles and home runs. And, you know, last year, Daniels had 23 touchdowns and zero interceptions throwing more than 20 yards downfield. Drake May, similarly good, right? He had 13 touchdowns, just four interceptions throwing over 20 yards downfield. But Drake May, outside the numbers to the right, between 10 and 19 yards, had just a 28.2 passer rating. That's a place, those passes come off of play action. They're, you know, third down and five sometimes. Like, those are doubles in an offense in the NFL. And, you know, home runs, teams are pretty good at taking away the home run, right? Like, you know, they put out too high safeties, they pitch around you, that kind of thing. In the NFL, you have to be able to hit doubles. And last year, Drake May really, and the year before as well, really struggles in that 10 to 19 yard area outside the numbers sometimes. And, you know, that's not something that Jaden Daniels does. Jaden Daniels last year, outside the numbers to the right, 11 of 16, 203, two touchdowns, one interception, 125 passer rating. So, you know, I think that that's where maybe you can look at him and say, is that something mechanically? Is that something that can be improved upon? But that is something that when you looked at the production between those two men, it's in that kind of doubles range of the football field where May was unable to separate himself from Daniels last year.
When you mentioned the deep ball and the success Daniels had, statistically, he was throwing more wide open passes deep than anybody else. And he obviously was working with two first round wide receivers that might actually go in the top, I don't know, 10, 12, 15, something like that. I mean, how concerned should I be about that? Because every time I think about that, then I go, well, Joe Burrow had Chase and Jefferson, and it worked out all right.
Yeah, that's the comeback, right? And a lot of people will come back to the numbers I said about deep balls, and they'll say deep ball accuracy is a wide receiver stat, and that is true to an extent, for sure. And you know, I think that deep ball ability is kind of a thresholding thing. Can you get the ball down there? The accuracy is more of a wide receiver, can they track the ball type of thing. You know, Josh Downs was a very good, you know, rookie receiver for the Colts last year. He left North Carolina last year. That left Drake May with a little bit less to work with, whereas Daniels, he kind of grew into a receiving core that was pretty awesome with Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. So I do think that that is one place where you have to grade the guys on a curve, and one of the reasons why, you know, when you've seen guys like Jordan Love, his second to last year at Utah State was much better than his last year at Utah State. Josh Allen, his second to last year at Wyoming was better than his last year at Wyoming. Even Justin Herbert, his sophomore year was better than his junior and senior year at Oregon. You do sometimes see guys who, even Brock Purdy was much better as a freshman even than he was some of his later years. That is one place where I like to think about those guys where if college football catches up to a guy and then they have to adjust, there's sometimes a better pro prospect than a guy who maybe like Daniels is only improving, because sometimes when you're improving, could it just have been that the wide receivers caught fire and the quarterback was along for the ride? And when he doesn't have those receivers there, he doesn't know how to adjust. I think with Daniels and with Burrow, they were able to sort of build off of it. But, you know, Burrow went to a place in Cincinnati that had Higgins and then eventually had Chase. In Washington, you know, you have McLaurin, you have Dotson, who has struggled his first 2 years. Like, are you able to build around, you know, Daniels slash May in a similar fashion? That's going to be the next question for Washington's front office. Can they get the receivers that are going to replicate the successful ones that Daniels had when he was at LSU?
Eric Eager, Sumer Sports, with us here on G&D. So this is one of the toughest things, I think, Eric, that where the world of scouting and the world of numbers meet. And I'm neither, by the way. I'm just a pudgy dude that likes sports and wants my team to win. But thinking back to, you know, the playing days and otherwise, where a scout can go, yeah, this guy is raw and there's a bunch of mechanical flaws, but I see the thing, and the numbers will look at a guy and go, that dude stinks right now, for example. And again, I'm not saying May stinks, but looking at May, some of those inaccuracies and inconsistencies that, you know, that bother some, where you're going, That dude is so open. Everybody can make that throw. Why can't you do that one? And then he pulls that unbelievable throw out of his hind parts, you know, across his body, down the field, etc. How do numbers and data sort of account for someone that may not be a finished product just yet? That's what I find so fascinating about this process.
Yeah, there are factors that are pretty easy to put in a model, like age, volume. So a guy like Mac Jones, for example, he didn't have a lot of volume. So he, in theory, could have grown, but he was a little bit older. You have a guy like Daniels, who has played a ton of college football. Drake May, who's played a little bit less. So you factor those in. A lot of times, it's a really good question. You also have, with Daniels, you have two different college football programs he's played on. In the era of NIL and transfer portal, you really do have to have a question about how moldable is the clay that a guy comes into, right? If back in the day when you log on to University of Nebraska as a freshman, you stay there for 4 years, you're getting the same coach for four years in a row. You're probably pretty developed when you go and go play in the pros. Now, if you're hopping from UCF to USF and then all the way to Alabama, and you show some flashes, you're drafted in the first round, you might actually have more potential to grow. There's all kinds of factors that you have to factor in. And that's where I do think traditional scouting is actually going to come back and have a little bit more value than it used to, because there is more projection here. And then there's a whole deal about changing positions, which we're not talking about with quarterback, of course, but changing schemes is a big deal as well. Because you might, for example, Kingsbury might be asking May to do different things than he was in North Carolina, whereas he's going to do similar things possibly with Daniels than he did at LSU.
Who would you take if you were Peters?
I would take May, and the only reason I would take May is because of what you said. I think that you're buying Daniels at the top of the market. I think he's going to be, I would never ding him for taking May for Daniels. I think that that's a perfectly acceptable pick. But for me with May, there's a couple of things. I think he has the prototypical size. In the NFL, where offensive linemen don't get to practice as much, they're not as good as they used to be because of the CBA and because of what I just said with development. You need a sturdier quarterback. Guys are getting hurt more at that position than they ever have been. I think, the difference between Josh Allen and Joe Burrow is just physicality and how you can withstand injuries at the position because you're bigger. And I just think that there's a little bit more in the way of arm strength there. I think there's a little bit more potential there, but I think both guys are good. It's splitting hairs, but we're all make the determination is May, just because I think he's a little bit more the prototypical player at that position.
Eric, always great catching up with you, buddy. Appreciate the time and insight, man. Have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks a ton. That is Eric Eager of Sumer Sports on Grant and Danny. Kevin Harlan is the best. There's nobody who is better at announcing non-game things during games than him. You'll want to hear this audio we've got next on The Fan. I'm Grant, he's Danny. This is The Fan. We are on Twitter, at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. You want to join us there, keep the convo going all weekend long. We're Kevin Harlan, guys. Kevin Harlan is one of the great play-by-play voices in the country, calls every sport, and what I think I appreciate most about him is his ability to transcend when it goes radio versus TV, that craft. So in radio on Westwood One, mm-hmm. He is descriptive. He is painting a picture. He almost comes off, I don't mean this negatively, like in this carnival barking, words flying out of his mouth way where he's going, he's across the 15 and the 20, across the hash mark, and he's got it all. Whereas in television, economy of words, mm-hmm. less is more. You just touch a button, he could do both at the highest of levels.
But still, if I may compound and add on that, I know that's not the point of this segment, but in order to, he delivers that same level of exuberance and excitement, even when he's doing the economy of words. In other words, he doesn't need a big build-up sentence, like 17, 18 seconds, to tell you how exciting something is. You get that same energy with a fraction of the word space on the visual stuff. He's awesome.
I also think his personality,
yep,
it's just always been next level. You go back to the beginning when you first heard about him on Turner Sports 20 years ago. Oh, he's in the back of his head, right? Like, he's just my guy. I love Kevin Harlan. Mm-hmm. he has become famous, I would say, mainstream, for stylistically not being afraid to talk about what's happening around him. A lot of broadcasters, they're buttoned up. They got the shirt and tie on. They're calling the game. And if something happens in the crowd or someone runs out on the floor, they'll big time it. They're not going to call attention to it. We'll just break down, you know, what happened earlier in the game, and no one will know what's going on at home. That's not Kevin Harlan's style. Kevin Harlan, if someone runs on the field, he's going to do play-by-play of them running around and getting tackled by security. If confetti starts falling over the crowd in an arena a couple of weeks ago for college basketball, he's going to do play-by-play of the confetti falling when it's not supposed to.
Like, I want him to be in an arena, and then some people start bouncing a beach ball in the crowd. It's like the beach ball's in section 115, section 109. It's back up to 115. Like, I want all of that stuff.
I've always wondered. I think about this every day. What would happen if someone threw a chicken wing on the floor when Kevin Harlan was calling a game? Mm-hmm. I've always thought about this. Yeah. I know it's a weird thing to think about, but if I had a dollar for every time I thought about that, I'd have so many dollars, right? And then, lo and behold, last night, it happened, boys and girls. It happened.
Pelicans hold on, driving into Murray. Somebody's throwing something on the floor. 46 seconds to go, and a whistle blew. It's a chicken wing. Why would someone throw something that good out on the floor? It's crispy. Yes. It's warm.
Yes.
And I almost had to go out and I'm so hungry.
I hear your stomach over here growling.
What's that guy? I hope he eats it. I'm just going to save it for a little. I'm going to put it in that little heater over there. 46 seconds to go. It's Murphy with the ball and Fox, the quick Fox.
Seamlessly right back into the game.
I mean,
46 seconds to go. So there's a lot of things I like about that chicken wing situation.
It's a chicken wing.
It's a chicken wing. Just saying that in that cadence. Try not to enjoy or be entertained by that. It's a chicken wing. And then he breaks down the chicken wing. 6'11 big from Iowa State, right? He goes, it's crispy. It's warm. How do you describe a chicken wing? I wouldn't have done it with those four words. Well, words. It's crispy. It's warm. But they work. And it's
crispy. It's warm.
I thought that was great. And then I love he stops short of saying, what's this guy doing? But when the guy goes out to pick up the chicken wing, he's like, who's this guy? He's like, I hope he eats the chicken wing. Then he tells you he didn't eat it. He just put it away.
It's a floor chicken wing now, Kevin, so you're probably not going to want to do that.
My problem is, honestly, this is going to sound gross maybe, less the floor and more, I don't know who threw it. Somebody had that wing in their hand at some point.
Well, I will say the court's generally going to be clean. I mean, they got the wipe and they make sure it's good. But it's still a lot of shoe.
The way, there's some shoe on there. You know how many times those shoes have been worn? Once.
Yeah.
Those guys go through new pairs of shoes every single night. The court itself, unless it, you know, I guess it did probably bounce and slide across a little bit. So there was probably some dust being picked up. But I am way more concerned with the stranger who had it in their hands. Where were their hands? Did they wash them? Mm. Have they picked their nose? When was the last time they went to the bathroom? Are they a disgusting human being? They threw a chicken wing on the court, so they're probably not great model citizen.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of questions about who had the chicken wing before. But let's listen one more time to the great Kevin Harlan and the chicken wing incident.
Pelicans hold on. Driving into Murray. Somebody's throwing something on the floor. 46 seconds to go, and a whistle blew. It's a chicken wing. Why would someone throw something that good out on the floor? It's crispy.
Yes.
It's warm.
Yes.
And I almost had to go out and eat. I'm so hungry.
I hear your stomach over here growling.
What's that guy? I hope he eats it.
It's crispy. It's warm. It's a chicken wing.
Like if you measure the cadence, like if you're doing like a graph of his voice, you know, and you don't even see what the words are, right? Where it's like inbound pass down into the backcourt, passes to the, you know, to the wing, screen set up top, 5 on the shot clock, 4, you know, step back jumper, good. It sounds the same as someone throws something onto the court. It's a chicken wing. It's a chicken wing. You know what I mean? Like it's the same call for a projectile landing on the court.
I think the one thing, maybe there's a lot more than one thing, but maybe the main thing that I like the most about where we're headed in broadcasting in general, and in play-by-play, but just maybe in this industry that we're in, is personalities being more and more injected into it. It's okay to have a little fun. Like, there was a time where you had to kind of be above whatever that was. that would be viewed as amateur in a way, like years and years ago, you know, when Red Barber's calling games away. There's a chicken wing out there. I take it someone tossed it. You know, the humanity of that pool. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, we're at a point now where last night I'm sitting on a couch next to two former Capitals watching a Caps game, sticking it up, telling stories, breaking down the game. Carl Alster's talking about the rules to be in his group of buddies on the team and, you know, how you can't fart near someone. And all. I mean, this is a different era of sports consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And it is happening at the play-by-play level, too, where you see guys with personalities like Harlan, like my guy Birdman, Ian Eagle, who I think it's benefiting immensely, but it makes the experience that much better.
I'm into that. And I think there's a million ways to skin a cat, right? There's the – we've still got the big, huge, super important, you know, playoff game broadcast. Give me my Tirico. Give me, you know, my the austere Joe Buck or that kind of thing. Totally with it. It makes a lot of sense. But if you've got that NCAA tournament game and there's a buzzer beater, I'm going to want Gus Johnson screaming his head off, losing his mind, you know, at the turnaround fadeaway with the catch that goes in or live from the Palestra in December. Like, it's okay for it to be fun, too, I guess. I think there's room for everybody as long as you're good.
We're a week away from something pretty amazing happening in DC sports. We'll get into that next. Plus, what would a win look like with the Commanders' number two pick, and what does a home run look like? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.